This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 26th of May, 2021, and market's pretty quiet yesterday, at least the equity market. I think there's a lot going on here refreshing yesterday's theme, talking about this Fed reverse repo facility. We have to note this theme because we think it has actually been a key driver here of liquidity across markets. We saw that facility rising almost $40 billion to $433 billion in yesterday's repo. The two-year auction in the U.S. Out at well oversubscribed, almost 2.75% oversubscribed, resulting in a yield on two-year debt of 0.15%. So just voracious appetite when we're supposed to be heading into an inflationary environment for U.S. Treasuries. We think it speaks to a Fed that is overgoosing the system, potentially making a policy mistake. Could be behind, Peter, some of this comeback we've seen, especially in the riskier corners of the market, or at least the more interest rate sensitive NASDAQ 100 index, which I put up on slide 2. And, I'm always looking for divergences and fun stuff around the margins. And I noticed that the Dow transports are a little bit of a note that's not sounding together with the broader market. It's probably too early days to make much of that. But what's your take on the market here? We had uninteresting day after quite a comeback.
Yeah, I started our internal conversation by saying that not much is going on in equities. And to talk about your transport index, I would assume that one of the reasons why we probably have paused here a little bit is that we are peaking out in terms of growth quarter-on-quarter, year-on-year right now, right? And you still have elevated oil prices. So I assume there is a bill to be paid as well for these transportation companies on the input cost side. And but if we look at slide 3, you can see that the session we had yesterday was basically a complete reversal of in terms of performance. So the ones that have been performing the best this month, the commodity sector in India, were the two big losers in yesterday's session. And then the flip side of that, because of the lower U.S. yields to that Michigan conference board report or survey that came out, and Altea was very.
It was actually it was a conference board. It wasn't the Michigan one.
The conference board.
The general sentiment survey.
Yeah, and Altea was out sounding the stagflation alarm because the inflation expectations were still high for a five-year period, and you actually had the response in the U.S. Treasuries with yields falling, and all the growth like things liked it. So you can see that on the small inserts of bubble stocks, crypto, and the biotech. So the next gen medicine basket were doing quite well. I have highlighted as well the European market. There is still looking strong. We're banging towards that 4,050 level. We've done that now three sessions. I think the lower bund yields that we have seen successively over the past 5 or 6 trading sessions is potentially a short-term risk here for European equities because financials have been running the show and the momentum in that market.
But key point there. And on gold, I mean, we're seeing lower rates, but we have a market that's very concerned now about these negative real rates. When you have signs of inflation plus low yields from excess liquidity, that liquidity has to go somewhere, and it looks like some of it at least is going into gold.
Absolutely. This rally that kicked off back in April just continues, and we haven't really paused, and it's almost doing a copper right now, almost going starting to go vertical. We broke above 1900 yesterday. We're seeing flows, as you see here on slide 8. We're seeing flows picking up into both ETFs and into futures. We haven't seen that for quite a while. And what's also creating is some of these long-term trend-following funds, which have been short following this downtrend we had since August. They are slowly starting to get back in, basically covering positions. That basically means there's a constant bid in the market. And probably also one of the reasons why we're not seeing any correction of any size so far. So interesting developments there. But also, as Peter mentioned, with the stocks, stock markets and commodity sector, it's interesting to note that even though we're breaking high in gold, something like the miners are actually not following this, joining this party yet. So we've seen something like the GDX, which is the gold mining index, basically still sitting below the highs we saw last week. So interesting one to follow. So just finishing off on gold there, the key level I would say now is this 1923 level. If we break that above, you are also Fibonacci man, John, then it's a 61.8% retracement of the sell-off from last August, potentially a signal that that we are starting to head back towards the highs.
All right. Now, if we look at a couple of things on those points, and by the way, on the yield front, if you look at slide five, you can see that that two-year auction and that two-year yield result yesterday pushing down towards what looks like multi-month lows is pretty remarkable stuff. We really think this is dominating the market landscape here and potentially sending signals that don't really square with the reality, and that is that you have inflation, but you also just have a Fed that is stuffing the system with so much liquidity. It's suppressing yields, it's suppressing risk spreads, it's suppressing all kinds of things and creating all kinds of distortions. So we're very cautious here and pulling too much of a signal out of it. And I talked a little bit about the yen, and I think that could also be a missed signal that this is not necessarily yen supportive because of that these yields are going lower. So and then on the 10-year, we are seeing it lower, but you can see that it's still pretty cautious within the range there. Big levels coming up, though. If we get down below probably 1.5%, we have to look at that again. This is on slide five, by the way, if I didn't mention that. And then briefly on the note you made, Peter, that we could be getting at some kind of peak growth or peak sort of realization of this impulse into the economy from the opening up, from all the stimulus checks, etc. The surprise index for the U.S. that Citibank has been running for many years. So you can see this on slide six. So I put up the one for the U.S., Europe, U.K., and Canada. And you can see that the U.S. has just been dribbling lower back towards pretty much neutral on the surprise front. So where the data is coming in relative to expectations. We reached those crazy unprecedented levels above 200 when the economy proved to be more resilient than expected in the immediate wake of the pandemic last year. And now we're sort of getting to where some stuff is surprising slightly to the upside and other things to the downside. The most recent one was a pretty bad miss on new home sales. It's just a single data point. It's a pretty chaotic data series recently. And then on consumer confidence, where it was the expectations that fell quite sharply, but that makes some sense when the present situation improves. That went up and the expectations went down a little bit. That's evening out a bit, but it could be very interesting for what that means about employment data. And then I'll round out my soliloquy here with just the main thing moving in the FX space, and that is the Kiwi. We have seen the dollar a little bit weaker with these lower U.S. rates. We saw euro tempting a little bit, testing a little bit higher, but the really broad picture is not that strong. Kiwi up very sharply overnight, however, on an RBNZ move meeting last night, in which there is an indication that they could be moving in their forecasts by mid next year. Governor Orr trying to soften that forecast with comments saying that, look, it's the middle of next year, who knows where we'll be by then, and that's a quote, who knows where we'll be by then, and yet the market's taking the ball and running with it. You can see on the left on slide seven, the Kiwi running higher to the highest levels since that cycle high there from late February. So we'll watch that this move holds for the Kiwi.
Just a quick comment, John, because I can see obviously on the trend signal there that it's very, very strong on gold right now. I don't think I've seen the number that high for a while.
It's very strong indeed, and that is but just so people know what this is, it's basically the gold versus all of the rest of the G10 currencies. I think also I've included the Chinese yuan in that measure. So it's saying that gold is sending a very powerful impulse and strength across the board, and that's just an average of all the other ones. So individual currencies that have been weak, the signal is even stronger. So I would guess that the gold dollar signal is probably up in 8 plus.
And it's interesting to note that as well, then that silver is really trailing at this stage, and we've seen the gold silver ratio widen during the past week. We've also seen the gold outperforming platinum by a considerable distance. So just look out for those, because if we start to see this market stabilize at these higher levels, potentially could be a bit of a catch up coming in from some of these minor semi-precious metals.
Yeah, to me, I mean, we were talking about the inflation story. We've had all kinds of supply chain disruptions and types of things we haven't been used to on this scale before that have driven a lot of this sort of cost push, supply side driven inflation. But to my mind, and to really get inflation running a la the 1970s and other time frames, we really need to see this crude oil. It's a basic input into the economy. Crude oil needs to break out to the upside. What's your sense of the time frame, if that's going to happen, that it could happen?
Well, looking at slide 9 here, we can see how we settle into a relatively tight range here between 65 and the low 70s. And during the past few weeks, markets, speculators started to reduce their exposure. So just indicate that I think we're in a bit of a wait and see mode here, because yes, we got a strong pickup in fuel demand around the world, but it's still not synchronized. We still need major economies like India really start to recover as well. We need to see the outcome of the Iranian nuclear talks, whether that's going to add additional barrels into the market over the coming months. There's already now signs that they're starting to store additional barrels and tankers at sea. So basically they could flood the market initially if they get the permission to go ahead. So just look out for that. I think the focus today, probably the weekly inventory report, as you can see in the small inserts there, we are expecting drops across the board, especially in some of the distillates, some like diesel. So that could potentially be a small market mover, but generally the market is stuck for now.
All right. Now, what about on earnings, the earnings front, Peter? We've got still a few big names up, especially today, I guess.
Yeah, I actually, you were such a gentleman skipping my slide on emerging markets.
Did I cut you off?
So I actually think I'll just allow myself to go back to slide 4.
Dripping with sarcasm.
And this is a chart showing the relative indices, so MSCI, emerging markets total return in dollars versus the MSCI world, so basically EM versus DM total return in dollars. And as you can see here, the EM has been bleeding after a very strong rally from the lows in 2020, and we were talking just a couple of months ago that EM is finally back, and in theory EM should have this higher expected future return because better demographic tailwinds, higher profit opportunities than companies in our slow growth part of the world. But that's not always the case, and it was also part of the emerging market was also part of the value trade. But then we had the big plunge, and it was driven by China's crackdown on technology, the Archegos collapse that also baked in a higher risk premium on Chinese equities. To me, it seems like I'm smelling that things are changing, and we could actually see a pretty strong comeback for emerging markets. So have that on the radar, everyone. Going back to earnings. We're waiting for Xiaomi to report after the close here in Hong Kong. It's the big smartphone manufacturer in China, arguably the Apple of China, if you will. And then we have Pinduoduo, which is the fastest growing e-commerce platform in China. They will be reported later in the US session, I believe. A very interesting company to watch. And then on the US side, Snowflake on the bubble stocks basket. I've talked about that a couple of times. And then Nvidia. Nvidia is so key because it's in the middle of this shortage we're seeing in semiconductor components. They could be hit in the second half of the year on their revenue growth because they simply cannot get enough components. And then you have this angle that they have recently been talking down, or they want to crack down on customers acquiring a lot of their graphics cards just to do crypto mining, because they they have to polish their ESG rating as well. They cannot be seen as being on the bandwagon of polluting activities in the world. And I've put in, it's on slide 10 by the way, everyone, I've put in a 12-month trailing revenue growth, not growth, but in actual numbers, so $1 million, and you can just see the growth trajectory that Nvidia has been on since 2016. It's driven by gaming, but then especially also crypto. It is the unknown fact nobody wants to talk about, even the management. They don't want to actually try. They don't even try to single it out. But you can just see on the numbers that it obviously fit very well with the explosion in activity and trading volume Coinbase, with the activity and demand numbers you see in Nvidia, because they are big in data centers and gaming, but gaming and data centers is not growing that fast. It's only crypto that can deliver these. So I would still always say I love Nvidia. It's a fantastic company. The free cash flow generation, all that, by all means, but you still have this uncertainty around the crypto spaces. Crypto is off 80% one day. Who knows what will happen to Nvidia? We saw that small dip on the chart was when you had the collapse the last time in crypto.
All right. And just on that slide, and looking at tomorrow's earnings report out of Canada, just a shout out to Canadian banks. You might consider a name change. The Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce.
Or Royal Bank of Canada.
The Royal Bank of Canada and the Imperial Bank of Commerce. Very interesting thoughts there. Okay. Humor aside, we have a pretty quiet day on the macro calendar. There's another RBNZ event risk up tonight. I think probably most of what should have been said has been said. But maybe, you know, we have Governor Orr, who I think is quite the currency warrior or devaluation or person that's very sensitive to the valuation of the currency. So there might be some sharp words that were trying to beat down any follow-on effects of a stronger currency from that RBNZ meeting from last night. Quarles, who's a voter, is out speaking. And OLIS, a weekly petroleum numbers out of the U.S. with products as well. And then we're going to round out this week with an interesting one, the April PCE inflation print, which could be interesting, of course, in comparison with that crazy official CPI print we saw for April at well above 4% on the headline. And then I think actually the June FOMC meeting shaping up to be quite an event risk of these types of liquidity pressures we've been talking about just sort of continue unabated into that meeting. They're going to have a hard time not saying something that moves the market or provides some volatility. I think we're going to call it a wrap for today, and we'll be back, of course, tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.